Hello, this is the Graciously Confident podcast. I'm Will Leach, journalist and broadcaster. And this time we're looking at what goes on in our schools, specifically during assembly and in RE lessons. Late in 2025, in November, the Supreme Court, which is the highest court in the whole of the UK, issued a ruling known as JR87. That's a term used to keep the name of a child anonymous. We don't know who the child or her family are, and we don't need to. But that legal ruling means we will see changes to the way RE is taught in our schools, both primary and secondary, and it'll change the rules on assemblies as well. Now, when the news broke, the headlines were interesting, to say the least. Landmark Supreme Court ruling must lead to end of Christian by default in NI curriculum, said Humanists UK. And RE taught in schools in Northern Ireland is unlawful, court rules, said BBC Northern Ireland as its online coverage began. And UK rules that NI Christian education breaches rights, said Christian Concern. Now, headlines can never tell the whole story, but on the face of it, all that could sound pretty alarming. You can see why people immediately wondered, is teaching Christianity in RE going to be illegal? Is it going to stop? Is it going to be replaced with teaching about other faiths? Will Christian-focused assemblies be banned? Well, in a word, no. That won't happen. There will be changes, but no bans. Perhaps you've had a few messages on social media, seen the instant reaction stuff, some welcoming the ruling, some furious about it, calls for you to sign petitions, loud words about the erosion of Christianity in our land, and so on. We want to help you navigate all of this and understand what the ruling does say and what it does not say. And to get a firm grip on what it'll mean for the teaching of RE and for assemblies and schools here in Northern Ireland. The Department of Education, after all, has been working on all of that ever since the ruling came out. Fortunately, we have help from two people who know all about this. Dr. Andrew Brown's an educationalist, and he lectures at Strandmillis College in Belfast. His wide experience has held lots of roles and responsibilities in how RE is taught in our schools. He's also a trade unionist and an elder in the Presbyterian Church in Ireland. Andy, welcome. Nice to see you and Graciously Confident.
Thanks,
alongside so. Andy, Ian Bingham, the head of CARE Northern Ireland. CARE helps Christians pick their way through the ethical and moral issues in society. Ian's also taught RE for 15 years. You've been ahead of RE, Ian, and you've written on the subject, so you're very welcome.
Thank you very much.
Guys, some people got very agitated about the JR87 ruling and what it means and how we should react. It's fair to say there's been some misinformation, or as we might say around these parts, some people lost the run of themselves. I've had petitions sent to me from groups I knew nothing about and about whom I wasn't at all sure when I looked into them. So help us. What was their ruling about, Ian?
So it's really about a young girl, anonymised, as you said in your introduction, as JR87, and she attended a primary school here in Northern Ireland. She was taught RE and attended school assemblies, but her parents, who would not claim to be religious in any way, in fact the judgment said that they would be, quote, broadly speaking, humanist in their outlook, was concerned around the fact that their child was being taught Christianity as opposed to learning about Christianity. And so they challenged the system. They felt it wasn't right that she would be taught in this manner. And so they took the school to court and went through the High Court. And they won that case at the High Court. It then went through the appeals process. And at the appeal, the Court of Appeal disagreed, saying that the right to withdrawal was enough. And
which means they could have taken their child from lessons.
Exactly. They could
assemblies,
have just
whatever.
Simply removed their child from the lesson, from assembly. But it was then taken to the Supreme Court, the highest court in the land, and they have then agreed with the original judgment that the school breached Article 2, Protocol 1 and Article 9 of the European Convention on Human Rights. And so they've declared that RE and school assemblies must now change to become more objective, critical and pluralistic in their delivery of RE and assemblies.
Interesting, isn't it, Andy, that they could have withdrawn their child, their daughter, but chose not to.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you say that some people were agitated about this result, and I must say I was too, but for different reasons. And my agitation came from the fact that we never needed to go here. Okay. One of the things I've been very privileged to do in my life is to work with what's known as the Transferor Representatives Council. That's the body for the three main denominations in the Protestant churches in Northern Ireland and their interests in education. And we've been lobbying successive ministers and officials about this over the last 5 years to say, look, Northern Ireland is changing. It's a changing place. People's understanding of RE may not be what RE actually is. And I think one of the things that's really clear is that RE in schools is not the teaching of religion. It's about what religion teaches us. And we have a society where, yes, we remain majority Christian in Northern Ireland, but there are folks of other faiths, folks of no faith, folks who are humanist. And in our high schools, Key Stage 3 and 4, we already teach about how we coexist with each other and how we understand other worldviews and other world faiths and religions. And we've been asking that should come into primary schools, obviously in an age-appropriate way. We've also been asking that the RE curriculum should be overhauled because of this. And that, and this is really important, and that RE should be subject to inspection by the Education
Which
Agreement
it currently
Council.
Isn't.
It isn't. It's the only subject in the school curriculum where it's not inspected. And that has or could, and maybe can, lead to some rather poor delivery of RE out there where people do misunderstand it. I mean, I'm an educationalist. I go and see my students teach lessons, etc., etc. And I can see RE at times delivered in a rather mundane way. I'll give you an example if I may, and I'll not take too long over. I remember seeing a student teach a wonderful lesson on Jesus Calms the Storm. And she had it all beautifully set out, and she started with a video cartoon of Jesus calming the storm. She then read the story. The kids then did a newspaper report, and the fast finisher and task was a tweet about this. Super on the surface. I said to her afterwards, I said, okay, you taught the same story four times. Was this an English literature lesson? She looked at me. I said, okay, you taught the same story as fact four times. Was this a history lesson? And she says, I don't understand what you're saying. I said, the purpose of teaching the story of Jesus calming the storm is not about the reinforcement of the story again and again and again. It's about the fact that this RE lesson is and should be about the application of that story. There are things in life, boys and girls, which are bigger than us and we can't deal with. Christians believe that Jesus, etc., etc. And so I think there can be confusion over this. So we've been asking for quite some time for a look at the revision. And it was just, well, it wasn't quite ignored. It was, yes, with
well,
other priorities. It didn't happen. And this didn't need to happen. And it was just something that was going to happen unless the changes were made. So we were agitated because of that. I was also surprised, actually. I was surprised that the Supreme Court made this judgment. It's not like them to get into something which is as sensitive in a jurisdiction as this is. And so it did lead, as you said, to the somewhat sensationalist reactions from some people that came on. But I know that probably as this conversation goes on, you're going to be considering, well, what are there any positives in this? And what might they be? And I'm sure we'll get into
Absolutely.
That as we move on.
Absolutely. But as you've pointed out, it didn't need to happen. It did.
Yeah.
And we are where we are.
Yeah.
I want to deal very quickly, and we will move on, with the fact that there was misinformation, Ian, and I know you've written about this, where people chose to take what they could take from this to make other political points, social points. So there were the people who said, well, this is a result of letting all the immigrants into the UK. So how do you react to that?
Well, I think you're right in what you say, because I don't know what your social media was like in the minutes and hours after the judgment.
Mine
completely lit up, and I sat completely flabbergasted, if I'm perfectly honest, reading through my social media comments of people and fairly public figures as well, making comment on this within minutes of it being released. And there's no way that they could have ever read through. I mean, the document, the judgment is 39 pages long, so there's no way that they could have ever read it. And so, as you've rightly said, there's these sensationalist headlines and tweets and posts that were put out. And the difficulty with that is that then others jump on the bandwagon and share those and so on. So what I decided to do was I just took a back seat. I watched from afar for probably the guts of a week just to let the dust settle a little bit. And then what I did was I penned an article on this, and you've referenced it already, and I just felt it was important to get a bit of clarity out for people and a bit of reassurance that it's not as bad as what is being made out. It's not as bad as the headlines that you've read at the start of this podcast, and it's not as bad as the social media posts. And I think that's what I really want to get clear to people who are listening to this. We'll thrash it out a little bit throughout this, but it really isn't just as bad as it's being made out. And as Andy rightly said, as a former RE teacher, it is time. It is time that we looked at the content of RE, and it is time that it was updated.
I mean, it is interesting that teachers have been saying for some time, to come back to your point, Andy, that we need to change the way RE is taught, and we would like to see changes to the way. And that was Christian teachers saying that as much as anybody else. And don't forget that children have been learning about lots of other faiths for a long time already. And any children we know who've grown up to adulthood could tell you the basic tenets of other faiths because they learned about them in school. It's not like it wasn't happening. It's not like this is a big change. Andy, let's get to this three-word phrase, objective, critical, pluralistic. Most of us go, help us.
Okay, so I suppose in many respects it goes back to the little example that I gave. Okay, so it's not about teaching something as compulsory truth, and it is about teaching that there are alternative viewpoints, and it is about teaching the fact that people have differences of opinion, and in many ways it's about not expecting or hoping or demanding that people agree with the position that's being put across. I know within teacher education, at Stranmillis, our students are taught from an early stage that when you're presenting these stories, it's Christians believe or the Bible.
The Bible teaches, yeah.
I mean, I have a huge affinity for Scripture Union Northern Ireland, and they come in and do wonderful work in schools. And our local E3 worker in my area has a really wonderful way of how she introduces.
And that's an SU member of staff.
She'll come in and she'll do local assemblies and SUs and stuff in our local schools. But when she's standing talking to a group of primary school children, she starts with, you know who I am and my name, and you know that I have this really special book that's very important to me, that teaches me a lot of truths in my life, and not everybody agrees with me. But, and then she unfolds the story. What she doesn't go in and say is, here's the truth, and if you don't believe it, then sorry, you're wrong.
Which is what you generally politely get in church and from pulpits, but you can't be doing that in RE lessons.
No, because the fact is that the people who come to church are people who either believe or are seeking to believe or are just wanting to find out something. They're there in a voluntary basis. People who go to the schools and who go to control schools in Northern Ireland, which are open to all faiths and none, aren't going to necessarily believe.
Have to be there by law.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
We're going to look at the content of RE and assemblies and a very interesting take on a strong word, and that word is indoctrination, and quickly at it, inspections and withdrawals, although we've mentioned those already. So in terms of what is now going to be in RE lessons, Ian, what can be there and what might change?
Well, that is the big question. Well, isn't it, you know, that the Education Minister and the Department of Education have to figure out what is going to be the content? I think it's, again, it's been referenced already that this is not new territory. Well, I taught in a post-primary school, and since 2007, there's the introduction of world faiths and world religions into schools. And speaking personally, as a teacher, I loved those lessons. I loved teaching that content because there's something about journeying alongside students on that journey. I'm not there declaring that I have all the answers. I saw myself as a studying alongside and learning alongside. And there's something I always told my students, there's something positive to be gained by the study of other faiths. And that might come as a surprise to say that, but actually, you know, if you take, for example, Islam as a faith, There's something incredible that can be learned by studying, for example, the fact that they fast for a whole month. I mean, I know Christians who struggle, and personally speaking, I struggle to fast even for a day or a couple of days as a Christian. Or take, for example...
And if you do, take a look at Ramadan.
Exactly, at Ramadan, exactly. Or take a look at the...
And fasting is, of course, a biblical principle.
Absolutely.
For us as Christians.
Absolutely.
As well.
You know, or take a look, for example, of Judaism, how they treat their holy scriptures. It's very carefully handled, very carefully put away, covered in a mantle, beautifully decorated and so on. And yet, I know Christians who you know, come and throw their Bibles down or whatever and so on. And so there's something to be learned, something to be gained. The Buddhist faith is another example, very, very big on caring for others and looking after others because of the whole reincarnation idea. And so I used to tell my students that this is nothing to be feared. There's something to be gained actually by studying faith. I suppose the question is, where do we introduce this now? As the education minister builds a team to re-look at the core syllabus and revise the core syllabus, where do we introduce this? Do we introduce it into foundation stage at P1, P2, or do we hold that off until...
Well, it will be. I mean, this is what's going to happen. It will be introduced from foundation stage. But it's about age appropriateness,
yes.
Isn't it? It's about the different clothes that people wear.
Mm-hmm.
It's about why someone might come into school at a particular time of the year, doing something that's different. I mean, for me, this whole thing is about trying to diffuse ignorance and trying to understand difference. And you'll know that in Northern Ireland, we're not very good at this. I remember being at a conference and there was a lady at the front, a Muslim lady, and she was talking about how we didn't need less religion in schools, we needed more religion in schools so that we could understand each other. Mm-hmm. She gave an example. It was a horrific example. Okay, horrific's a bit hyperbolic, but she talked about going to a parent-teacher interview in her kids' school, and her primary school teacher was talking to her about her child's development in English and said to the mum, of course, this must be quite difficult for him because he speaks Muslim.
Oh, you're joking.
Yeah. I mean, now, the teacher was being nice and generous and kind, but literally thought that speaking Muslim, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
And this is, I mean, you don't have to go further than my part of the world and the events that happened this summer and then other events to know about.
So coming up against fundamental ignorance.
Fundamental ignorance and how, and again, you mentioned it about earlier, Will, in Ian's article about, you know, people blaming this on migrants and things like this. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely incredible. And so, It does need to come in the foundation stage. It does need to come in the key stage one. So, and that's why whatever happens next with regard to this, it's really important that the department involves educationalists in this, as well as, obviously, and I'm going to say this as a church representative, but as well as the churches. But I think some of the counter arguments against this are, you know, people will say, well, why would the churches be involved with writing the curriculum? What do they know? We're not just going to get the Reverend Jones from Second whatever Presbyterian to go in. The churches will choose people who work within education, who are experts in the field in education, and they will be in there involved in that curriculum.
That's an interesting point about churches being involved in developing this curriculum, because Ian, I know again that's concerned you, where you've said, look, yes, there need to be all sorts of people, but it needs to reflect the society we're in. And if you look at what Evangelical Alliance did, they did a study for the UK and a specific one for Northern Ireland. They were both called Good News People.
Mm-hmm.
It was at the start of 2024, Good News People for Northern Ireland. But they started with a census reality that 80% of people in Northern Ireland identify as Christian. Yeah. So surely the curriculum in Northern Ireland should start from that point and say 80% of the people, therefore the families coming to us, may have Christian exposure, culture, and an expectation of learning about that.
I think it's a very, very valid point. And I think if you take a look at the previous core syllabus, was developed in 1996, I think it was. And the population statistics, the demographics of Northern Ireland were 90%. And so the vast majority of that curriculum was Christianity. In fact, it was all Christianity. However, in 2006, it was revisited, and given the nature of Northern Ireland society, it was decided that there should have been more world face. And I think we're in that same situation as well, you know, that as we now look at the core syllabus, we have to admit and say, listen, statistically and demographically, Northern Ireland is changing. But I think the robust piece of data that we have available is the Northern Ireland Census of 2021. It found that 80%, both Protestant and Catholic, ticked the Christian box, and only 20% ticked the other or no faith. And so if we're looking at developing a curriculum, then surely it should reflect the demographics of the society that we live in.
Let's be clear. Neither of you is arguing that the 20% should be ignored or overridden.
No, it's just a
case of accepting that it is 80 and 20.
It is. Exactly.
Yeah.
And the judgment was quite clear about that. The judgment made clear that Christianity will remain the primary faith taught in schools. It says that.
Yeah. You know?
So it didn't say you can't teach Christianity in schools at all anywhere.
The judgment's quite clear that Christianity remains the core faith in Northern Ireland and will remain the core part of the RE curriculum. But that, as Ian has rightly said, you know, and it's about an iteration that happens 2006, 2010, 2026, that we need to ensure that RE remains relevant to all sections of our society.
Let's move on from the content of RE to assemblies, because that was the other issue. And there is a distinction here, because what happens in RE will ultimately be part of the curriculum. Yes. And therefore, that's what teachers must teach. And there's very strong, strict and clear guidelines on that once they're produced. Assembly is a bit more difficult, a bit hard to tie down, because it's not the curriculum. It's the thing that sets everybody else up for the days. And a lot of cases, they are faith-based assemblies. So we get down to issues of who takes them, if there are visiting speakers. And Andy, JR87's the family involved said, we don't want to withdraw our daughter because we think she could be stigmatised. Yeah. So it was based on a fear of something that might have happened, but as far as I can tell from the reading, it never actually happened.
Yeah. Yeah, and let's be honest about this. There are some wonderful organisations and people out there who come in and take assemblies, and they're brilliant, and they do it in a way that is gentle and understanding and age-appropriate and uses age-appropriate language and resources. And there are those who maybe aren't. And if you weren't from a Christian faith perspective, you could see that as being an uncomfortable situation. Well, in the churches, we've been recognising this for some time, and actually one of the things that we did, we came up with this concept, understanding that many of our school leaders, even prior to JR87, but certainly exacerbated by this, were getting concerned about potential litigation and potentially folks in the community of their schools not feeling comfortable in spaces like collective worship. We convened a meeting of, we contacted about 20 of the main providers, Christian organisations who go into schools to take RE, collective worship, curricular and other non-curricular. And with them we created a charter, which is actually just today being presented to all primary school, all controlled primary school
principals, as we record this,
post-primary school principals in Northern Ireland. And we offer that charter as a helpfulness and a way of saying to folks, look, here's this charter. It's been agreed with most of these organisations. When people come in, you can ask them to sign up with us. You don't need to use the charter. It's there for you. You can publish it on your website. You can advertise it to parents. It's there as a way of going, look, you see your concerns, your potential concerns? We've already thought through this. And the charter looks at things like the purpose of the engagement of the organisation, the values that it shares with the school, how it adheres to the school's policy and ethos, how the organisation will share without expectation of agreement, how the organisation has committed to respect those who don't share its views, how the language used will be careful, and how the delivery will be age appropriate, and how the organisation will support the school community. And we offer that charter then as a public affirmation of our intent to contribute positively and respectfully to the life of schools in Northern Ireland. So that, for us, is a very tangible way of how we're going to do this. And so in potential tinderbox situations where parents come in and say, look, or that organisation that come in and a principal's able to go, but this charter that we've got in our school, read that really carefully. Mm-hmm. That organisation says they're not going to stigmatise or isolate, or they don't expect your child to agree. They're part of the overall educational picture and we bring them in. So we hope it's something that, that is of tangible benefit and use.
You can see that it could be useful because you want to get this right. You don't want Christian speakers getting themselves into trouble and you don't want some people who we might consider to be bad faith actors coming in and saying stuff that we're not happy about. And this is a good time, Ian, to bring in this word that the Supreme Court used a lot, indoctrination. Now, the judge accepted this can be a very negative word, but in this case, indoctrination was taken to mean evangelization, or this very old-fashioned word, proselytizing, basically, saying this is the truth, preaching, and so on. So there are issues that do need to be thought about in assemblies around that.
Yeah, I think in both RE lessons and in assemblies, it can be very easy to drift into this indoctrination mode, particularly if that person is a Christian. Mm-hmm. And it's a very tight, very hard road to walk as a Christian teacher, because obviously you want, I'm not just talking about RE, I'm talking about any Christian teacher, because obviously we have our mission to, our commission is to make disciples of all nations. And so as Christians, we want to do that. But I suppose the big question is, where is it appropriate to do that? Is it appropriate to do that kind of thing in an RE lesson and an assembly? And I'll be perfectly honest, and I'll say I don't think either of those occasions are appropriate for evangelising or indoctrinating of students. In fact, the judge very helpfully in the judgment declared what they understand to be indoctrination. The word indoctrination ordinarily has negative connotations, they say, but in the context of Christian faith, it's a synonym for evangelism or proselytizing. It means winning others over so that they believe in and practice the Christian faith. And I genuinely do not believe that on a school assembly floor is the place to do that. I have sat through hundreds, if not thousands, of assemblies in my time, and I've seen some really good practice, and I've seen some, shall we say, not so good practice. But I do know that there are schools around, particularly primary schools, who will use their school assembly as a floor and as an opportunity to evangelise to their students, to present them with the gospel. I've heard of church leaders who've been invited in and have been given free flow and say, listen, hit them with the gospel and then lead them afterwards into a prayer. And I genuinely believe that that is not an appropriate place to do so. My thinking about the whole indoctrination is that indoctrination is not so much a content issue. Indoctrination is more of a delivery issue. Mm-hmm. Now, what I mean by that is it's not so much about what the content of a core syllabus is or the content of an assembly is. It's how the teacher, principal, or whoever's invited in delivers that.
The way you say it.
The way you say it is exactly right. So, Andy, for example, you and I could be in the same department and you and I could teach exactly the same lesson from the core syllabus. But you don't indoctrinate while I do, because I choose to use that platform to then evangelise and to encourage my students to commit their lives to Jesus. I don't believe that that is the right place to do that.
So the language would be you saying, you must believe this, it's true, and Andy, you saying in that case, Christians believe.
Yeah. And it's all down to me, indoctrination, and this is where I find this judgment difficult, because the judges are claiming that the way the core syllabus is written is indoctrination. But to me, it's not. It's how that's interpreted by
the teacher. The thing is, Christian teachers, and this has been one of the things that people have been scared about, Christian teachers should not be scared about openly being Christian teachers in schools. They should not be scared about the pupils knowing what their beliefs are. But they can do that as a teacher of science or a teacher of drama. It's where you kind of feel that there are two key areas where you're allowed to do this openly, you know, or there are two key areas where you hijack it to be evangelical. The school is not the place where there are official times of proselytism, indoctrination, or even evangelicalism. Schools have at their core a Christian ethos. How they live that out on a daily basis sends a bigger message.
Yeah.
Who was it who said, preach the gospel always, if necessary, use words? Yeah. I think it was St. Augustine, possibly.
Yeah.
Okay, and so that's how we should, and how we serve, serve our pupils and their families and our local communities. But we shouldn't be using RE lessons to teach religion. We should use them to teach about religion and to apply that to the big questions of our lives. Collective worship by its very name is a different one. It's a difficult one. It's one we have to get this right. Within a Christian community or a Christian society, how can we ask people on a Tuesday to worship Christ? Collective worship. How can we ask them the following Tuesday to worship Allah? Mm-hmm. How can we? So we've got to get that right about what the purpose of collective worship is.
Mm-hmm.
But there's nothing, and there's nothing to stop Christian teachers, and there's nothing in this judgment, and there's nothing coming down the line where Christian teachers should feel scared about saying, I'm a Christian teacher. Yeah. You know it because of how I live my life. Mm-hmm. You know it because of how I love you as a child, because of how I care about you as a kid, because of how I realise your potential as a child, how I go the extra mile and mark in your work, all of the things that make me Christ-like. They shouldn't ever feel I have to hide that.
And that's what I did. My first lesson with every class I did was to introduce myself, get to know them, and say that exactly as you've eloquently put it. I'm a Christian teacher, and that means I'm going to do this, this, and this. But what I didn't want to do is to then influence them to think that throughout this year, I'm going to force them to become Christians. Mm. That's not what it's about at all. Yeah. But if I can just say this, there is a place, I believe in schools, there is a place for evangelism. And that is a scripture union.
That's scripture, and exactly what I was going to say.
Do you know, and so that's, I think it's a wonderful way in which Christian teachers can...
Because it's a club. You go to in your own time,
exactly.
Voluntarily.
You have chosen to go there.
You have chosen. You're not forced to be there.
Totally. Or you've maybe been invited there and you've gone for a look, but it's not that you have to be there.
Totally. And Christian teachers and students alike can present the gospel, can encourage the students who are there to come to faith. There's absolutely no problem. For many years I was involved in the SU in my own school and invited into other schools to take their SU, and it was a wonderful, wonderful way to be a Christian in that environment and to, from the front, to be able to promote the Christian faith and encourage others in their Christian walk as well.
As all broadcasters do, I'm looking at the clock, so I'm going to jump on a couple of things. It looks quite obvious that they're going to have some system of inspecting how RE is done, not least because it's got to be got right. That makes perfect sense. And it's quite clear that schools are going to have very good policies on what happens if somebody asks for a withdrawal. Mm-hmm. Where does that child go? How does that be managed? Yep. How do they avoid this fear of stigmatisation? Who looks after them? Child protection, all the obvious things that schools think about all the times. At the end of this, there are teachers and parents who've been listening to what we've talked about who I think want reassurance or want to say, tell me it's going to be all right, but what do we need to be thinking about? So primarily for parents, but for teachers too, I'm going to ask each of you, what would your advice be at this stage whilst we're waiting, the time of recording this, for the formal guidance to come and the changes to happen? Ian?
The first thing I would say, I suppose, is don't panic. As we've already said earlier on, this is not as bad as being made out. It's actually an opportunity. It's an opportune time for us to look at the core curriculum and to embrace the change that's coming. But on a practical level, if I sort of think about my teacher colleagues and friends within the world of education, I would advise anyone, particularly in the primary school, to get ahead of the curve. We don't know what the Education Ministry and Department of Education are going to produce in this guidance. We don't know at the minute what the core syllabus will look like, but we do know that there will be some element of world faiths. And so I would suggest to any teacher out there who doesn't really have awareness of any other faiths, I would suggest take a look, go and do some research into some of the world face out there.
You can do it from the current curriculum.
You can indeed. You can. You look at the world's top five faces as an example, top five religions, and go from there. Take a look into some secular organisations, some secular movements, the likes of the Humanist Movement, just to see what they're saying and get yourself ahead of the curve. I would also encourage all teachers out there to, whenever the guidance is produced in the core syllabus, is there to explicitly make sure that any world faith is mentioned in any lesson plans and any schemes of work, to ensure that there's transparency, and if anyone asks any questions, it's all there. In terms of assemblies, I suppose I would just advise people to be very, very careful who they allow and who they invite into their assemblies. There is no doubt that schools and school leaders will be flooded with invitations now by people who are very keen to come in.
We'd love to come.
We'd love to come and help you out in this and so on. I just would advise just to do the due diligence. Absolutely. Take a wee look and see who they are as an organisation. Is there a wider agenda? Is there ulterior motives to what they are trying to do? If at all possible, to keep it in-house. You trust your own judgments. You know, if you don't want to invite somebody in, trust your own judgments. That way you can control what is said. And as a very practical piece of information, I suppose, I would encourage, if somebody's leading an assembly, to ensure that there's another member of the SLT in that room or another...
Sorry, the SLT.
The senior leadership team, so the kind of leadership team of a school. And taking notes, just to ensure that anything that is said by an organisation is scripted and there's written evidence for that. And I suppose on scripting, I know that as teachers we don't really like to script things, but when it comes to an assembly, I think it's always good practice to script your assembly and to stick closely to the script. I know teachers like to go off on tangents here or there, but having the kind of digital record, it would mean that somebody could then, if somebody does come and say, listen, you said this, there's a digital...
Here's our script and we stuck to it.
We stuck to that script.
Yeah.
Other, I suppose, examples I would give is just be creative. I used to love coming up with really creative stuff in my RE lessons. Be creative in and around how you teach religion, how you teach world faiths. It is really exciting to learn about other cultures and learn about other faiths as a teacher, but also then to learn that as a student. And I suppose I would just make sure, you've mentioned it really well, that all the processes and protocols are in place.
Get it right.
Get it right.
Yeah. Andy, do you want people to calm down, or what's your take?
Yeah, I do. I mean, so I would give maybe five or six different key pieces of advice for schools. And first of all, continue delivering RE and collective worship in line with the current policies and syllabus, because that's what we have. As you deliver RE, just incorporate simple comparisons with other religions as you go along. I want to make sure my words aren't misconstrued here. Avoid presenting Christian truth claims as compulsory belief. Are you with me? Okay. Provide guidance to external speakers.
We believe this. It's your choice whether you believe this.
Okay. Provide structured and non-isolating alternatives for pupils who withdraw. I think it's really important that if any parent exercises with their kid the right for withdrawal, that is something that is useful and productive and worthwhile and involves them thinking about whatever the themes were that were going on in assembly that day. As Ian has said, keep brief written records of RE schemes and assemblies. Engage early with parents about the school's approach to RE and collective worship, and then await further guidance from the Department of Education. And I know there are many stakeholders, the churches included, who look forward to being involved with that guidance and helping to work with the department.
Well, you know this world so well. When can we realistically expect that guidance to arrive?
The minister has tasked some key members of staff in the department to get started on that one. I think probably within, by the end of late January, early February, there will be the first reach out.
2026.
To different folks. There will be a timeline will be produced at that stage, and then they'll start the revision of the curriculum.
So it might be there for the next academic year, September 26th.
I would say it would definitely be there for the next academic
year. Not least because there's been a Supreme Court ruling.
Not least, but also because a new curriculum has already... there's been work going on behind the scenes on a new curriculum anyway, which does this. And then that new curriculum, you know, the department might look at that and consider that and present that to various stakeholders, and they might completely change it, or they might add to it, they might tweak it.
Andy, Ian, both of you, thank you so much for helping us pick our way through an issue that we know impacts so many families, so many teachers, so many schools. We appreciate your knowledge.
Thank you both.
And thanks to you for listening. Graciously Confident is a podcast from the Council for Public Affairs. That's part of the Presbyterian Church in Ireland. I'm Will Leach, and we'll be back to tackle another issue very soon. But for now, wishing you every blessing, and bye-bye.